Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening. This is Evelyn. Thank you for joining me. It's a bittersweet day today for us here and all over the world. We lost an icon. We lost a great lady. Miss Aretha Franklin passed away today, August 16, 2018. Just wanted to take a moment to lift her up. A gracious lady who has been a classic example of humankind, of humanness, of human being. There is not a decade in my life that I can think of that has not been touched by the lady and her music. Rock and roll, gospel, blues. But it was her singing of opera that mesmerized me as a young woman. Here's asking God peace on her family, and that she was able to feel the love and prayers going forth for her this week. And that now she knows she will never be forgotten. I dream a dream. A couple of years ago, someone said of her, Aretha opens her mouth and God comes out. The deepest pain and the deepest joy coming out of her soul. Thank you, Aretha Franklin, for sharing with the world all your joy and tears with such purity and grace. Someone posted a letter, actually an article, from the Jet magazine, December 3rd, 1970. In it, the article says, Aretha says she will go Angela's bond if permitted. The Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, says she stands ready to go Angela Davis bond, whether it's 100,000 or 200,000, if the court will let her. Ms. Franklin goes on to say, my daddy says I don't know what I'm doing. Well, I respect him, of course, but I'm going to stick by my beliefs. Angela Davis must go free. Black people must go free. I've been locked up for disturbing the peace in Detroit. And I know you got to disturb the peace when you can't get no peace. Jail is hell to be in. I'm going to see her free. If there is any justice in our courts, not because I believe in communism, but because she's a black woman and she wants freedom for black people. I have the money. I got it from black people. They've made me financially able to have it. And I won't use it. And I want to use it in ways that will help our people. This gracious lady kept not only black people, but just being Aretha Franklin. She touched people all over this world. And today, there were people sharing their loss and what she meant to them. Aretha Franklin, We'll never, ever forget her. This is Evelyn Bowden. I am having a little technical difficulty for those of you who joined in on Facebook, but I am sure the listeners that are listening directly on Blog Talk Radio can hear me. You can also hook up with me through EvelynBowden.com, and we'll have these technical difficulties worked out shortly. The call-in number is 929-477-4085, and on that number you can also listen to me here at Blog Talk. This has been an interesting week. If you followed anything in the news, it's interesting is the best word that I can say for it at this moment. There were a couple of things that I came across that affected children that I just wanted to briefly talk about tonight. And I think I said it on last program that you speak to children as if the wisest, kindest, most beautiful, and magical humans on earth. For what they believe in is what they will become. And this is so true. That's why it was so disturbing to me to see a couple of things. Now, one, you know, could have been solved, and may have been actually solved in the best way. This had to do with the six-year-old that was turned away from a private Christian school because of dreads. Now, from what I saw and the way that was handled from the school's point of not letting that child in, after this child had been enrolled, of not letting him come in and saying to that child it was because of his hair, I think that should have been a discussion between the school and the parent. The child should have been allowed to be seated until that was worked out. One problem that we have in this country, especially with when it comes to children of color or people of color in general, is that we use things like hair texture, hair length, hair color, and the skin color, the shape of the nose, the lips, and general shapes of the body. We use that to single out, to make a difference. And we make children think less of themselves because perhaps their skin is too dark, or their hair is too kinky, or they have big lips and big nose, and we have them thinking that something is wrong with them because of that. And as parents, we sometimes fall short and by not preparing them to deal with that, things like that on the outside. But never should a child be singled out because of his natural being, his hair. And I think that's something, to me, you know, it sounds like it's something petty, but look at the amount of attention that is given to hair, to black people's hair specifically, when it comes to the workplace, when it comes to schools. We're more than hair. And that should not be an issue, but that just, but simply because of who we are, we have allowed that to become a point, a picking point, and a point where we're singled out because of it. Our children, especially. One of the saddest things that I've ever seen was a little girl who looks in the mirror at herself and says, "I'm ugly. I don't like myself. I am ugly." That's wrong. That is horribly wrong. We have to do better and prepare them better. But something needs to happen. A discussion needs to be had in all the school systems before it comes to the situation where a child is actually turned away at the door. We have to have these discussions, and these rules need to be made with Black people present, not just with someone, some school official in a room making a decision about a people that they really don't know anything about. And in a lot of cases, they don't care. But the discussions need to happen before the child is in the situation and the child has to deal with that. The other situation that I saw had to do actually with individuals receiving an email about the denial of a job or that they were weeded out and not considered for jobs because of their name. And the email, I think, said they were suggestive ghetto names. That, totally wrong, a name. And, but we know that this does happen. Our name, and I think this is something that we need to be conscious of when we are naming our children, that those names are going to be with them forever. Those names will be with them forever. And what happens when they are applying for jobs, when they are applying for college? Oftentimes, they never make the cut, and you never know how they never know that they are have even been weeded out, because the process takes place without them ever seeing you. The person will see the application and see the name, and well, that sounds like a Black name, we don't want that. And it goes into file 13. I actually worked in an employment office one time where that was actually taking place. At that time, you brought your applications in. So if a Black candidate would bring their application in, the papers had numbers on them, and the clerk would circle that number, and anyone handling that paper knew that that was a Black candidate. And if it was a certain type of job, they were never going to get considered for it. So they would that application would immediately go into file 13 or the garbage, and that would be that. And the applicant never knew. They never knew. The next day, you know, whenever they called in to check on their status, they would be told, well, a more qualified candidate got the job. And that was nowhere near the truth. They just were not considered because they were black. Moving forward, then came the names when you have black sounding names. And that was another way of weeding people out. Now, it is your right to name your child whatever you want it. But when you're doing that, you realize that the child will grow up to be an adult and has to live in a bigger world. Now, is this fair? No, it's not fair. But it is. It is, meaning this is the reality. So, I think I'm back with you on the live video, so I apologize, but if we cut out again, you can just go to EvelynBowden.com and hook back with hook up with the live broadcast. It's not fair, but it is, and so it's a reality. So you have to, when you are naming your children, consider that. Consider that the name may be used to weed them out in a screening process for college admissions and jobs, and that also it sets children up sometimes as targets where children are bullied because of their name. So think about that. When you're naming your children, think the whole thing through. And again, this is something everywhere you find this this action that takes place where the discrimination is because of a name, call it out. Call it out. Deal with it right there. But try to, especially when it's dealing with your young children, try to prevent some of this stuff. And again, like I said, I'm not trying to say don't name your child what you want, but you must prepare them also to be, when you do that, to be able to deal with situations when they are faced with being screened out for jobs or being bullied for names. And this was, you know, the young lady that actually I think they said there were about 12 of them that received letters saying you were not considered as a candidate because you had ghetto names. I mean, ridiculous, ridiculous. The third thing that I saw that really hurt me, and it's something that should have, the adults in this situation should have dealt with this long before school opened. And it had to do with children being sent back. I think there were 12 of them that had been promoted to the ninth grade. And once they got to their high school, all excited about being promoted to the ninth grade, they were told, unfortunately, they couldn't stay. They were sent back because they didn't have the required eighth grade classes. And in this situation, apparently these students had fallen behind, but they were put in a program where supposedly they were taking 7th and 8th grade classes at the same time. And this would allow them to requirements and basically catch up with their class and go forward with their regular class. But it wasn't until they showed up that they were sent back. And can you imagine what happened to the ego of a child when something like this happens. Here they are all excited about going to high school. You know, I remember, you know, going from actual elementary school to junior high school. That was a big deal. And can you imagine going from junior high to high school? That's an even bigger deal. And then to get there and basically get cold water thrown in your face because, you know, you have done as far as you knew, you've done all that were asked of you. But somehow the adults in the situation dropped the ball, and there are no records. There were no records. No one could answer when the superintendent asked, what did you teach them? Where were the records? Where were the grades? Nobody could answer that. And so these children are hurt. This, you know, this has to be made right. I don't blame the superintendent for sending them back, because one of the worst things that I know, and one of the things that damage a lot of children, is what we call social promotions. And that's where the child is sent forth whether he can do the work or not. And I've known of high school juniors and seniors not able to read, but they are in junior and senior classes, and even graduate not being able to read and write. You know, they were there every day or the required time to be in school, but they didn't get it, and they were passed on and on. Now, my earlier years, I was in an all black school, and there were some students that were considerably larger than the rest of us, and we come to find out some of those students that were still with us in elementary school actually should have gone on to junior high, but the teachers would not let them move to junior high until they got it. And as I know there are those who think that is cruel, but what is more cruel? If they were held back 1 year and were able to finally get it and then move on and, you know, and go on and catch up and go on, being able at least to read. But can you imagine had they, you know, just let them go straight on through and then the child gets out and can't read? The child's been there, done everything, can't read. I've been in that. I've seen that situation. I know how devastating that is. I know what happens to them when they hit a brick wall, and that brick wall often comes when they are in job situations, and they a lot of times they get to a situation of a promotion, perhaps to another a higher position, but they can't move forward because they can't read. They can't read, therefore they cannot follow the instructions. They don't know how to do the job because they cannot follow directions. They cannot do the reading. Brick wall, and that brick wall is there, and the pain, yes, and the stigma that would come from having to be retained a year. I think in some cases it's worth it. That child through, get them caught up and get them the help they need rather than passing them on and have them sit year after year after year in a classroom and they don't know what is going on. And then they get out in the real world and get slapped in the face because they were not taught. And a lot of, one of the studies that I did many, many years ago, I came to the conclusion that the students were better off before we had the desegregation. And I, a lot of people, you know, I'm sure would disagree with me, but when you see that it is possible for your child to sit in a classroom and not be taught, where the teacher will willfully not teach them, if you see that and see how they can still, now what they do, they get them to a certain point and then they put them into alternative schools. And they go to an alternative school, and the next step, and the next step becomes prison. That's what we call prison, the school-to-prison pipeline. They may have been better off to stay where people would take the time to teach them. We cannot continue to let things like this happen to our children. It kills their self-esteem. And some of them never really recover from that. Some of them never really, really recover. The next thing I want to kind of touch on, it has to do with the activities surrounding immigration. You know, we know what's going on at the borders when we know what's going on with people being sent back, you know, to Mexico and El Salvador and all that. We know that. And we assume that the majority of the people that is actually happening to are Mexican and pretty much those that are going, you know, to the borders of South America. But that's not the case. That's not the case. The news that we do not get is the number of African migrants that are sent home and are sent back, you know, to the countries that they come from. And in fact, where the numbers that are going back to Mexico have dropped, and they have the last couple of years, they have dropped, but the numbers of people going back to African countries has jumped up almost 150%. You know, but we don't get that news. We don't see the number of African migrants that are detained. That get, you know, get pushed, returned home. Y'all, I apologize for the live video, but what we're going to do, I'm going to continue with the broadcast, and we will have a better situation next time. I promise you. We're having technical difficulties, I think, primarily because of all the lighting in this room. But ICE is doing actually sending more people back to the countries that were on that list, the Muslim ban. They're sending them back more of them. As I said, the increase was had doubled, more than doubled. And I think the next accounting will be in October of this year. So when October comes, we'll see that. And the thing that has really, really, really been at the top of the news this this particular week has to do with Omarosa. Omarosa. Now, this lady, and I'm sure, you know, she's smart. She was smart enough to do, to get the information that she has, and talking about supporting the supporting documents, recordings or whatever for her book. Lady is very gutsy. I mean, I can't do anything but say that. She's very gutsy because it takes, it took some doing, it took some skills to be able to get those tapes, to get those recordings. I think she was highly underestimated, and that happened a lot. That's happened a lot. Black women in this country are not taken very seriously. And they tend to be overlooked, especially when they are in situation in mixed rooms. They tend to get overlooked. People think of them as less than, and when they do that, they will do things in their presence that they think the women don't get. And I say women, they do it with men too, but the black woman in this country, the very underrated, and I don't understand why, because I don't think any women of any other group that have gone through historically as much as a black woman in this country and still come through with some semblance of sanity and the drive to go on. But why would you underestimate them? But a lot of the people are very critical of what she did, saying, you know, she was wrong to go on her job with recorders, recording people, you know, setting people up for something, that was the wrong thing for her to do. What people that are saying that don't realize is that any supervisor, any manager, any department head, anybody that interacts with people, especially in supervisor subordinate position, if you go into a room and have what you think is a private conversation with somebody, and you think that there aren't recordings, either audio or video or both, or the other thing that people use are journals, and we saw that with the FBI director in one of the situations with this with President Trump. He wrote it down. He wrote down what transpired in a meeting between he and President Trump, shared it with those within his department that were in the positions to deal with the implications of what went on in that meeting. But when you are in a supervisory position, one of the first things they will tell you, if you sit down with someone, with one of your subordinates, you take notes. Now, some people had the little, used to have the little mini recorders. Some have, now, you know, they have the hidden cameras. You know, anything, the simplest of things could be a camera. Audio vision, you know, audio video camera. The simplest way to do it is by journaling. You think journals are, and diaries are for little girls or teenage girls with their wishes, and oh, no. Managers, supervisors, department heads, when they go behind closed doors with you, if they don't have the recording devices, they have a journal, and they're going to put a date, they're going to put a time, they're going to put the name, the people that are involved in the meeting. They're going to make a brief note also about the person, what their disposition, their what kind of demeanor they had, their mindset, even might even comment about their appearance. And the thing about those written notes, when they are done like that, they will stand up. So it's, I mean, I'm sure there's a whole lot of stuff that's probably out there on Omarosa that she may or may not know about. But in this situation, she just happened, she's struck first, I guess you would say. But she's playing, the game that she's playing is a dangerous one. And I think people need to really think about that. They say, oh, she's hunting ratings and wants the book to be sold. Yeah. But doing what she's doing, playing in the game that she's playing, her life is literally on the line. And you have to know the game. And one thing, in the 15 or so years that she's been associated in the environment that she is in, it appears that she learned the game. Now, I'm not saying that I agree with anything that she did, even the, you know, the tell-all and all that. I'm not saying I agree with any of that. I say that I understand her. I understand her motivation. I understand the need to protect yourself because that's what everybody else is doing. So there, and the taking her into that situation room, that was to send a message. That was a power play. And the message was loud and clear. She got the message. Those of us that know of those type tactics, we got the message. But she just happened to have, she did her homework and had her ace in the hole. Now, I really want, the question that I have is, why did anyone consider her or anyone else, all the other people coming in and out of that White House, why were they considered so invisible or so less threatening that they were allowed to get in there with a recording device? How could that happen? That meant that somebody was not doing their job. Somebody was not doing their job. Again, what she did, the what, and, don't necessarily agree with it, but understand it. I know, I understand it, and I also understand that she's taking a chance, because she could have sat on it and did absolutely nothing. But while we, I won't say we because I'm not one that's doing it, but while people are laughing and saying, well, she's still not invited to the barbecue, or that this was her bed and she made the bed, so let her lie in it and all that. What would you have done in her situation if you had walked into a situation and it turned out not to be thought it was? It's like grabbing a hot skillet or a pan, and you can't immediately turn that thing loose. I mean, it's burning, but you can't immediately let it loose. So you've got to think about how to do this. What am I going to do in this situation? So you let it go eventually, but you're burned, and she's burned. But to sit before those cameras and talk like she does, I'd say, I got some guts, and there are those of you that know me know I have some guts. I'll stand alone sometimes, but I don't know that I would be as steady in that. In that situation, in the pond that she's swimming in right now. I really don't. But it took some guts. But, sometimes you have to make hard decisions like that, and it's people like her that might actually make a difference, especially we're in a situation that we've never been in before, where you have out and out tyrant, and the way the government is being run right now is that of a dictator. Those type leaders that this country has prided itself in taking down in other countries, we have one ourselves. And if you don't believe it, think about what just happened and is happening with getting rid of people in positions of power that have knowledge of things that could perhaps, I'm not saying that it would, that could perhaps damage the current administration. They're cleaning house. They're getting rid of everybody. Nobody's left at the FBI. They're taking away security clearance, holes of knowledge. And this has never been done before. Now, I do know that under President Nixon, I think he had his hit list, as I would call it. And we find out now that Donald Trump has a hit list, too. He released it yesterday. And for a sitting president to have people that he will pretty much destroy a lot of careers, and removing a lot of people from very important positions, not just for themselves because it's their jobs, but for the country itself, because they hold the knowledge to protect us, national security. They hold that knowledge. But he is knocking them off one by one. This is Evelyn Bowden. The call-in number is 929-477-4087. I think I still have my connection on the radio. I don't have my connection on the live feed, but I do have my connection on the radio. Should you like to call in and make a comment, that number is 929-477-4087, and you can make your comments on anything that you would like to share with us this evening. Again, thinking about Aretha Franklin. She will be sorely missed. I listen to her music often, and we lost her today, as I'm sure by now everyone knows. We lost her today, but we still have her music to uplift us and to kind of get us away from things sometimes. Sometimes when you just want to have an element of freedom, we do it. Listening to her music, she has a way with changing, phrasing and words that will actually make you feel. You can feel the meaning and understand it much more through the feeling, through what she's doing, than what the words. Looking at the words or listening to the words, you have a way of feeling the life of the words that are written. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. We had some primaries also this week that I meant to touch on. I think Vermont was Minnesota, and one other one had some primaries that, and I think was some surprising outcomes there, and we just want to encourage people to continue to go out and vote as the candidates put themselves out there for to take some of these positions and to make some changes for us. And also, consider running for office yourself. I saw where a couple of people that ran had some type of tragedy or negative situation happen to them personally in their personal lives. And they knew that something needed to be done. They knew something needed to be fixed about it. So rather than waiting and asking for someone else to do it, they decided to run for office themselves and put themselves in the position to take control, to take some of the seats and make this instead of somebody needs to do something, it turned into I will do something. There are still gutsy people out there. There's still people willing to put themselves in harm's way in a lot of instances to make a change, to do what's right, to do what they feel is right. And I applaud them. We had a transgender person in Vermont in their primary. In Minnesota, a Somalian American. And in Connecticut, one of the teachers of the year, that was nominated, or I guess nominated by President Obama in Connecticut, won the Democratic primary there. So people are doing things, and you know, no matter how things begin to look to us, we're thinking things are, you know, are about as bad as they can get. There, whenever that happens, and people start, just regular, ordinary, everyday people start throwing their hats in the ring, so to speak, good things happen. And in that way, you know, we still have faith and courage, and that's what makes us great. People are willing to stand in the gap there. Join us again next time. We'll talk some more. I want to do a program where we go into things like the need for health care and what's going on in the economy. We're going to look a little deeper and dig a little deeper into some things that are the effects that are not so obvious. And a lot of things that's not being said. That is the problem, major problem that I see with the media today. There is a lot, with all this focus on one thing, there is a lot that's going on, a lot of information that people need so that they can make informed decisions. A lot of information is not getting to the masses, and especially in our communities of color, especially in the Black community, where we have lost a lot of our Black-owned and operated media, and so we don't get a lot of the information that we need to help us to make informed decisions. And instead of going on what somebody said or I think, I was listening at some people talking about the economic condition within the Black community, and they were repeating stuff that somebody said about how great we are doing. And I'm going, what planet are they on? Because that's not what is happening. But they are relying on people who have no real knowledge of their community to tell them things about their community, and therefore they're not getting the right information to make informed decisions. And we are going to have to do better. A very, very dear friend of mine, that was his, the thing from the day that I first met him until the day that he died, he wanted so much to develop a media program where we trained our own people to go out and get the news and be able to share the news in all mediums, whether it was radio, whether it was TV, whether it was, you know, with the computers, whatever way. That was one of the things from the very first day I met him, and I knew him quite a few years. But he was always talking about getting people trained in and know how to be journalists and how to handle media, all media, and be able to get information out to the people without having to rely on someone else basically feeding us what they wanted us to know, because that was one of the weak points, that even though we were focusing on education on getting, teaching people how to read and write and all that. That was our major focus, but the problem that we had, that what we found out was that we were not getting information talking about the African American community. We were not getting the information that we needed to get us in a situation where we could make appropriate decisions that would help us and move forward instead of remaining stagnant. Had a note here about the inaccurate information that came out from the White House having to do with the employment numbers. And the question is, why the lie? Well, why the lie? Because she could, talking about Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Why the lie? Because she could. Because left unchallenged, Americans, especially African Americans, would believe the lie. Because she said it. And had been left unchallenged, it would have gone down. Many would have taken that as the truth. This underlines the need for us to continue to try and gather information. And one of the things that I do is try to share as much information as I can about some of the current things that are happening in our country and in the world. This is Evelyn Bowden. Thank you for joining me, and we will work on the video and the live video so that we can have interactive communication while we're on the air. And I do apologize. This was actually the first time that I tried to do the live video in addition to the live audio program, and we've got some kinks to work out, but we will get on that and hopefully have that taken care of before our next broadcast. Join us next week. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening, all of you out there, and look forward to seeing you next Thursday as we broadcast each Thursday night beginning at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Good night.